like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Steve Jenkins, co-author of Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time. Jenkins and his partner, Derek Walter, ended up adopting Esther as a baby. In a few moments, we'll hear that adoption story in which Esther's eventual size was misrepresented, shall we say. The book, due out May 31st, but available for pre-order now, recounts the adventures and misadventures of life with this pig, including chronicling Esther's evolution into a social media phenomenon. Her Facebook page has more than 700,000 followers and counting, a number that's not only rapidly growing, but there are multiple Esther posts each day, typically generating a few thousand likes, sometimes a lot more than that. Esther has clearly affected many lives, perhaps none more than Jenkins and Walters, whose experiences with Esther prompted them to open a farm sanctuary, the Happily Ever Esther Farm Sanctuary in Campbellville, Ontario. We'll hear about these things and many more in a few moments when I play back the conversation I recorded yesterday with Steve Jenkins. First, though, it's practically incumbent on me to mention the WMRF Summer Fun Drive starts 1 week from today, June 1st. And on that day, I'll be looking to raise a great deal of money. Let's call it $3,000 in less than an hour. Yikes. The only prospect I have of reaching that nutso goal is to raise much of that money before next week's Fun Drive show. So I'm hoping you'll consider pledging early. And right now isn't too soon. If you like the work we do here, the interviews, people like Steve Jenkins with Esther the Wonder Pig, and last week John Doe talking about horses and punk music and all kinds of other stuff, and the week before that, Bronwyn Dickey with her amazing book, Pitbull, and so on. If you've ever been helped or educated or even just entertained by Talking Animals, we hope you'll really step up with an early pledge. And to further entice you, perhaps, I'll mention some of our Talking Animals exclusive thank you gifts this time around, including a pair of amazing tickets to see Steely Dan and Steve Winwood on the same show. That's right, in Tampa on June 30th. Copies of the Esther book signed by Jenkins and Walter and Esther's hoofprint signature. You can also offer copies of John Doe's new book, Under the Big Black Sun, as well as copies of Pitbull, again, the remarkable new book by recent guest Bronwyn Dickey and signed by Bronwyn, plus other books, DVDs, and more. For information about all the Talking Animals, thank you gifts, and fast, easy ways to pledge for them in advance, please head to talkinganimals.net, or it'd be great if you just want to give me a running start by donating right now via the Talking Animals tip jar. Just a bit ago, I posted the link to the tip jar on both the Talking Animals radio show Facebook page and my personal Facebook page. Easy peasy. So help a guy out, will you? And let me remind you about the new upgraded WMNF app for smartphones, for both iPhone and Android. It's pretty fabulous in a bunch of different ways. Check it out if you haven't. If you have the old app, just upgrade to the new one. But either way, you're going to really love it, I'm sure. So right now, let's move into my talk with Steve about Esther the Wonder Pig. Recorded yesterday, this is Steve Jenkins on Talking Animals.
Good afternoon or morning, as case may be. Steve Jenkins, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Congratulations on the book, which isn't officially out until May 31st, but is available for pre-order right now. And I guess we should note that that, among other places, could happen at estherthewonderpig.com. But I am fortunate enough to have read the book already, and I found it just really breezy and conversational and fun and funny, and of course also with some profound and poignant moments, too, along the way. It's just a really great book, fun, easy read. Perfect for poolside or beachside reading, I think. So
amazing. Thank you so much.
So the Esther situation is notable in a number of ways, including that on the one hand, we have this social media phenomenon who within a certain realm is very well known, not to mention much beloved. On the other hand, there's a pretty sizable population of folks who could be excused for saying, who the hell is Esther?
So, absolutely.
Yeah, so I suspect the book will kind of go a long way in closing that gap. But for now, just because I think there's still a lot of people out there in the who the hell is Esther camp. Let's do some Esther 101, starting with maybe exactly how she did enter your life to begin with.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, me and my partner, Derek, we've always both been big animal lovers, and I had an opportunity come via Facebook, of all places, from an old friend, to adopt a mini pig. At least it's what I was told she was, is a mini pig. She would be about 70 pounds, full grown, and, you know, was immediately infatuated with the idea. Things moved super fast. Later that night, I got told somebody else was interested and I needed to decide right away, and I jumped on it. And so I brought her home without previously discussing it with Derek, and showed up at home with this little 3-pound, adorable, tiny little piglet that has become Esther. So it happened really quick. At 3 in the afternoon on a Friday, I'd never, ever considered owning a pet pig, and by 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, I had one.
Right, which that leads to all kinds of things, including this micro pig who was going to be 70 pounds full grown, is now, I think, what, 650 or thereabouts?
That's right.
But I guess we should also note that for some context that you do point out in the book that you're a longtime animal, I think nut is the reasonable word to use here. And so I think part of the reason I assume that that Facebook message came into you was that the person thought, well, Steve is a needed animal person and or maybe a soft touch, and maybe this is where this pig can find a home. So.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, no, I was always the one to, you know, bring home the baby bird or, you know, the injured squirrel or something like that. You know, I was, a magnet for animals and always, always loved animals.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just a natural for me to be intrigued. I mean, I think she knew I was intrigued, of course. I mean, right. I think most people would be, but I mean, who would actually follow through?
Right. Well, and after reading the book, I'd be hard pressed to think of someone who ended up being more delightfully duped, than you, because there was this kind of weird thing where you hadn't discussed it with Derek, and all of a sudden there's the pig, and guys are off and running on this adventure, and again, it's not at all a micro pig, and a lot of the things we'll touch on along the way here. But you know, I don't know if it's Esther's charisma or her million-dollar face or something else, but maybe discuss something about her winning impact, whether it was making a believer of Derek or Leon, or just generally getting out of the doghouse, so to speak, when she does or did do something naughty. I mean, it just seems like she has kind of a magical way of...
There's a personality and a character in her, and I think in all pigs, that, you know, we had never experienced anything like that before. I mean, as I said, we've always had dogs and cats, and, you know, I had a snake when I was in school. You know, I've always had animals as part of the family, but never, ever had either of us met an animal that had such, and it's going to sound really weird, but had such human qualities to her, just in the personality and the character and her eyes. I mean, her eyes are unbelievable. There was something about her, and no matter what she did, she would come running up to you afterwards just so pleased with herself. You know,
you mean, well, no matter so what she did excited. that was naughty, is that what you
that's
kind of
right.
mean?
Yeah, that's yeah, right. yeah, you know, and yeah. it was, you know, I guess it's any parents with their kids, you know, their kids can do no wrong, you know, so I mean, in my mind, it was, you know, it was always, sure, sometimes it was a pain, but it was always acute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I couldn't help but look at her and laugh, you know, because no matter what she had done, it was annoying for us, but she was having the time of her life.
Right.
You know? So how do you get mad?
Hard to get mad at a face like that,
yeah.
I think, or stay mad at least. Yeah.
So we had to learn just how to avoid those and prevent those situations. You know, it wasn't about getting mad when it happened, because usually it was our fault, is kind of how we came back at it, too. You know, if she got into the groceries, it's because we left them too close to the edge of the counter or didn't put them away right away. Or, you know, it ultimately stemmed back to us reasoning that it was our fault and that we had to do something differently to prevent it rather than get mad at her for doing it.
Well,
you know, you're not going to change her behavior in some ways. You know, some ways you can help assist in behavior modification, I guess, like teaching her to go to the washroom outside. You know, but you're not going to take away that instinct to eat.
Right. Well, that's a pretty broad latitude, because when you say, hey, I always figured, what did we do wrong? But when Esther's pulling over the stove or something, it's like, wow, that's pretty permissive if you're saying, well, that's where we went wrong by having the stove here in the kitchen, I guess. But
you know what, though? The time she knocked our stove, it, again, we'd come home with groceries. So we'd left all kinds of groceries sitting on top of the stove. So what she had done is jumped up on the counter. I mean, she actually had both of her hooves on one on the counter and one on the stove. And she knew she shouldn't have, because it didn't get knocked over until we came back in the house with the next load of groceries. And she saw us coming, so she backed away really quickly to leave, because she knows she's not supposed to be on the counter, obviously.
Ah, okay.
And so as soon as she backed away, that's what pulled the stove and the groceries with it.
Ah, so she was actually doing a good thing when the stove was pulled over. She was recognizing that she was, okay, wow. Okay, I want to come.
Do you like justify things?
Yeah, I want to come live in that household. That's great.
I know,
but
right?
Now you mentioned a moment ago learning to go outside for the washroom. Now,
yeah.
We don't necessarily need to get into all the unpleasant specifics, but it turns out that house training a pig is a very different enterprise than house training a dog. Maybe discuss at least some of the challenges and a pivotal moment or two, and once again, how our spirit and charm sort of prevailed even at some of the roughest moments along the way.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Esther courses, I mean, again, we can't blame her for the toilet training issues, because we started her on a litter box, right? We were expecting this 70-pound full-size pig.
Yeah.
So when you come home with this 3-pound piglet and you get your little cat litter box, right? And I'm thinking, oh, this is perfect. And in her defense, she took to it very quickly, the litter box itself. The mm-hmm. problem was she grew faster than we could grow the litter box. You know, so with the end litter box, before we had to finally say, this isn't going to work, she's got to learn to go outside, it was a kiddie pool, one of those blue plastic pools you'd get at the Home Depot or you know. It was huge. It was 5 feet across, and she would stand in it, but when she peed, it would come out the side. So she was doing right, but wrong at the same time, you know. So what we had to do then is take away the litter box and teach her at that point, you know, 4 months old or 5 months old, after drilling her about going here into the box, to say, no, we're taking that away. We're changing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to teach her to go outside. So that's when the real nightmare began. You know, we were already having the issue of, you know, her missing the box and having to clean up a mess. That was a problem on its own. Now we took away the box.
Sure. Right. The game changed on top of everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. So the problem got exponentially larger before it got better.
I got you.
But again, when we took her outside, she learned very quickly what we were asking her to do, but she learned so quickly what we wanted that then it became, okay, well, we're going to go outside 20 times a day, because she knew she'd get a treat if she went outside and, you know, pigs will squat like a dog when they have to pee.
Mm-hmm.
So she would squat, and then she'd get all excited and come running back to you for a treat. And of course, me, proud papa, oh, she squatted, here's your treat. Well, she only peed maybe 2 out of those 20 times, and it took me forever to figure out that she would just wanted the treat, and
sure.
She knew that she had to squat for the treat, but she wasn't actually peeing. And I didn't find out until it snowed one day, and she squatted, and there was nothing in the snow, and I thought, wait a minute.
I'm being gamed here, I think is how you describe it. Yeah.
How often is this happening? You know what I mean? And that's when we realized. I'm like, get it. I'm like, she's got me.
Yeah.
So that became a problem. And then going away, because, you know, we had dealt with this. So we were trained. We knew the signs, what to watch, and we had our ways of working with her. But we traveled a little bit. We went to the cottage for a few days, just as we were kind of getting this under control. And so we left her with a house sitter. And we came back to absolute chaos, because this house sitter, I mean, she had a job to do, you know, so she'd have to leave the house. She'd go to work. So Esther was on her own way more than she would be when Derek and I were around. And when Esther did make a mess, even if it was in, we had built a little pen for her in the basement so she could be put there if we did need to leave.
Yeah.
She'd make a mess in her pen, and the house sitter wouldn't clean it up properly, as we really couldn't expect her to. Again, you've got, you know, you babysit a dog, and a dog makes a mess, you clean it up with a paper towel. You know, if a pig of her size at the time, 300 pounds, makes a mess, you know, you need a mop and a bucket.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, so we came home to a disaster after those 3 days, and I think that was our lowest point.
Yeah.
Where we thought, I don't know, you know, can we do this? You know, we just thought we were getting it under control, to realize then, two people that used to travel all the time. I mean, we were ultimately bachelors, you know, Derek and I. We had great jobs. We had a great time. We had a lot of fun. You know, we traveled quite a lot. We'd go to Europe. I've got family in Europe, and I play the bagpipes. And, you know, all of a sudden, all of these things we'd always done, we're now seeming like we'd never be able to do them again.
Yeah, like you're
right?
tethered to the house, kind of, in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, that's when we really hit, I think, almost our breaking point. And you know, we weren't sure if we could do it and if we could keep going. And then, was that fair to Esther? And I mean, it was just, it was really tough. That was really tough.
Yeah. That sounds like a real low point, mm-hmm. but as I think we all know or can sort of figure out jumping ahead, the magic of Esther once again prevailed, and you guys kind of turned that corner. And let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Steve Jenkins, the co-author of Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time, due out May 31st, but available now for pre-order. And not coincidentally, Steve is also one of Esther's two dads. This conversation was recorded yesterday. I guess we've kind of established at least why, in particular, you and Derek and others who enter Esther's personal orbit tended to become enchanted with her. But since you have kind of now greater distance and probably perspective than you had even while just writing the book, I'm interested to hear why you think Esther has ignited such passionate response on social media. Every step of the way, from when you guys first mm-hmm. took a step in that direction to now, where it's just bonkers.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy, and it's getting crazier. I mean, the page almost doubled in followers since April. You know, and we were talking hundreds of thousands of people in the last few months. I mean, it's just been crazy. And there's no, I really don't know why, to be honest. I mean, I think there's so many different parts that add up for different people, you know, because we noticed the first real wave of big Esther support was absolutely the animal rights community. And then the more popular she became within the animal rights community, and I think there's a very obvious reason why she was popular with the animal rights community, just because it was a chance for people to see a pig living a happy life,
mm-hmm.
you know, where a lot of people in the animal rights community see very, very sad and troubling imagery all the time, you know, so to see a pig like Esther in a complete opposite situation is just a bright spot in the day of some people that do some really, really tough work.
Sure.
So I think that's why she became very popular with them so quickly. But then as they started sharing that stuff, I think their other kind of circle of friends within those animal rights people started to see a different type of post coming from them. So rather than it always being this doom and gloom stuff, occasionally they'd share a happy post from Esther that would draw somebody else in, you know, a post that they might have ignored from these people, most times being much more graphic or direct. They'd see this come across and it would be intriguing, you know, because it's not very often you see a 500-pound pig, you know, sprawled out on a love seat in a living room. right.
Or being spoon-fed ice cream on the bed or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's where I think she's kind of gained a little bit of mainstream momentum.
Yeah.
And then people become incredibly loyal to Esther and incredibly, I'm trying to think of the right word, dedicated, mm-hmm. I guess, to Esther and to what she's doing. In to such a level, though, that I mean, we get messages, and I tell people this all the time. I don't tell people the messages themselves, but the messages that we get, Duncan, are so personal. And you know, it's like people have taken Esther into their, you know, into their families, you know, and so they'll tell Esther things that they don't tell. I wouldn't imagine you'd tell anybody, you know, they come to Esther when they're having a bad day, you know, and they'll tell Esther about their bad day. And a lot of times messages are addressed to, you know, to Derek and Steve, you know, Derek, mm-hmm. you know, to us. But, you know, when you get a message, you know, dear Esther, you know, that's when you know that you're getting something super personal, because those people aren't writing to tell Derek and I,
right.
You know, they're writing to tell Esther, something that I guess they feel they can't tell anybody else,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Really kind of, intense, I got to tell you. It's really intense.
Yeah, no, because I assume it's kind of like often sort of a very, they feel comfortable, they see the pictures, they obviously are, as we all are, enchanted by her, and they feel comfortable, even if it's something very personal or confessional, which must be mm-hmm. Quite remarkable on the other end, reading those things.
That's probably the hardest thing, I think, to be totally honest with you, mm-hmm. and you may not think, most people wouldn't think about that as being the challenging part.
Yeah.
But taking that in, you know, and taking in a lot of the stuff that people send you can be really, really tough. Really satisfying. It's incredibly satisfying. But at the same time, it's unbelievably emotional sometimes. You know, I mean, we've had people write, we had a mother write us a little while ago, you know, just to say thank you for showing her 4-year-old son that it's okay to have two dads.
Oh, wow.
You know, like little things like that.
Yeah.
That we never, ever imagined.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because in a way, for the way you guys live and have been for years, that probably seems totally almost incidental. to the Esther phenomenon, but the fact that that's what this kid and therefore the mom was responding to is very very powerful.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And like I said, it gets really emotional at times because you don't think about that or think of ever impacting somebody's life that way. And really, I think the other thing that people forget is, I mean, we were living this life for, you know, a year and a half with Esther before she went online, you know, so, I mean, this is just what we were doing. Granted, it changed to the sanctuary and things have exploded, you know, but I mean, living with Esther and having Esther in the house, it's just what we were doing, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So to now all of a sudden be given, you know, all of this, you know, attention for it. Is surreal. It's really hard to kind of wrap your head around. And for it to be so deep with people, you know, it's not just the novelty of, oh my God, look, there's a pig in the house. You know what I mean? It's like she's impacting people on such a deep level that it's really hard to, like I said, wrap your head around and fully understand, I think, the impact. It happens so quickly for us. That's the other thing. We're moving so fast all the time, just between running the farm and keeping up with her social media stuff. I mean, never mind all the other stuff that's going on, you know, trying to get all the other little things that we were trying to work on. There's such a fast pace that it's really hard for Derek and I to step back,
and
kind of look at what's going on around us. And, you know, the few times that we do, it's terrifying. so we run back into our bubble.
Right. No, because it is like just this morning, just in preparation to speak to you, of course, as I would anyway, I saw an Esther poster too turned up in my feed. But I went specifically to the page. And from the time I saw something about like waiting to be served, or I forget what she was saying, but, you know, I'm waiting for, there was probably maybe 1,000 or something likes. And when I went back to it just before calling you, I think there was like 3 or 4, maybe 5,000. I mean, in just a very short time. So, but in a way, the social media also, I think, figures into perhaps the heaviest, most serious portion of the book in some ways.
Yeah.
To properly set the scene, let's first talk about how life with Esther affected how you and Derek thought about food and the path that Esther had been on before somehow she was brought into your life. And that, in fact, she was and is a quote-unquote commercial pig.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, I mean, again, when we first got her, I mean, just to give you an idea of where my mind was, and when I first heard the idea of this mini pig from my friend, my mind immediately went, okay, I want a pig. I really want this pig. How can I present it to Derek? We'll use it for Derek's magic shows. You know, Derek was a professional magician. So I'm like, oh, this will be amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The things and the gags and the, you know, that's where my mind went immediately with how I was going to justify this decision to Derek.
Okay.
So we were of a completely different mindset, you know, and it wasn't until even when she came home and she was a pig, we had got this pig in the house. In my mind, I'm still okay with eating bacon because she's not one of those pigs. You know, I even had that in my head. And I remember saying that to Derek. I actually said that to him because he had said something. I don't know if I can eat bacon anymore. I'm like, oh, Derek, it's a different kind of pig.
Interesting.
You know,
yeah.
You know, oh, totally. So, yeah. I mean, I had that wall. And it wasn't, of course, until I went to the vet. And it was about 2 or 3 weeks after we got her, which I know seems like a long time before you take a pet or an animal to meet the vet for the first time. But we weren't sure if we were going to keep her, of course, right?
Right, right.
So she wasn't going to the vet, and we weren't making that whole arrangement until we had crossed that bridge and Derek was on board. And, okay, we're keeping her. She's got a name, great, let's find a vet, going to the vet. So we go to the vet, and he sees her cropped tail, and immediately, in a very diplomatic way, right, didn't, you know, raise hell and alarm me, just, you know, I think, Steve, you might have a bit of a situation here, you know, what do you know about her? Mm-hmm. And so I went through the whole thing, you know, 6 months old, spayed from a breeder, mini pig, blah, blah, and he brought back to the tail, and he goes, well, here's the thing, he goes, I deal with a lot of pot-bellied pigs and with pet pigs, and he goes, never in my life have I seen one from a breeder that has a tail cut. He goes, they don't do that. He said, that's a pig from a commercial farm. And he said, if what you're telling me is true, he said, if she is 6 months old, and he immediately admitted, he goes, which I don't think she is, he said, you know, if she is 6 months old, he goes, you know, she may not be huge, you know, because of course that's, I said, oh my God, how big is she going to be? He goes, she might not be huge. He said, you know, maybe 200, 250 pounds. He said, if she's not 6 months old, she could be quite a lot bigger. So, but of course, I'm still just barely over the hump with Derek of getting him okay to keep her.
Right.
Right? So I have to go home now and manipulate this story to make it positive in as best I can.
Yeah.
So of course, I fixate on the 250 pounds, right? That's
yeah.
how big she'll be, Derek. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, a little bigger than we thought.
Right. right. Yeah, don't panic.
But,
yeah.
you know, it had planted then that seed, the commercial pig feed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm looking at her entirely differently. And by then, you know, we'd had her for a month and see how we develop, right? She's more comfortable with us. She's comfortable with the dogs. So she's playing. She's running around.
Yeah.
When she's tired, she's climbing on our lap to come and have a nap. So we're seeing all of that come out in her.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, right immediately in the back of our mind is oh, my God, you know, this is, you know, that pork chop I just pulled out of the fridge. And, oh, my God, that's the bacon.
Yeah.
You know, so it started to make me, we both did. I mean, we didn't talk about it immediately. But I know Derek was having the same thought, and it was only a week or two after that that he was actually cooking bacon, that the two of us, you know, he was in the kitchen, I was in the dining room, and we both kind of had that whole, oh, my God, I can't do this. You know, she was at his feet, and bacon sizzling on the stove, and the smell in the house, and it was too much.
Yeah.
And both of us just said, you know, I looked at him, I said, Derek, I'm like, I don't think I can eat that. And he said the same thing. He goes, I don't think I can either. And that was it. You know,
yeah.
it got shut off. We carried on, though. We ate our eggs. You know, we went that whole route, too. Okay, well, that's it. No more pork. You know, done
yeah.
with pork. Cows are different. Chickens are different.
Sure.
right? And then we started, because of the no pork thing, and we're watching Netflix all the time, we stumbled across a documentary. And I'm never a graphic person. I had ignored that. And like I said, if anybody's come to me before S and said, you know, handed me a pita flyer and said, I want to discuss veganism, I would have, you know, put my hands up and said, you know, please stop. You know, I don't
yeah.
want to hear it. I would have walked the other way. So I don't like that stuff, the graphic stuff. I never could watch it because, like I said, I loved animals. I didn't want to see that. You know, in my mind, bacon was not a pig. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had that wall.
Sure.
And,
that disconnect.
And she tore it down.
Yeah.
So she tore down that wall for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we started looking at these documentaries, Vegucated and
yeah.
Forks Over Knives, really, really light stuff. Nothing graphic about it at all, but incredibly informative.
Sure.
You know, Cowspiracy was another one. It was exceptional.
Absolutely.
And that's what finally made us say, well, enough's enough. You know what I mean? It became more than about, not just about Esther and about the animals, but we're hearing all of this stuff about the health benefits and the environmental benefits and all the other stuff that goes with it, that it just seemed natural for us to make that call. I mean, it was obvious with her in the house, there was no way we were going back to bacon and pork. I just couldn't do it, regardless.
Right.
But once you start to want to know more, instead of saying, no, please don't talk to me about it, once you start to want to know more, the things that you find out are horrifying.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a matter of, well, should we do this? It was a, well, we have to do this. You know, it's whether we want to or not. I mean, I'm not vegan. We call it Esther approved,
right.
is the term that we use on Esther's page for the same reason, you know, that if somebody asks on the page that's not a vegan, you know, that was like I was 5 years ago. If I thought all of a sudden you were starting to preach at me, I would have shut you down, you know, and I would have left and I would have disconnected. So we try to prevent that by if somebody does ask a question, we use Esther approved. Well, what is that? You know, what does that mean? Rather than, oh, God, they're vegan. I know what that means. I don't want to talk about it.
You know what's
you
interesting
know?
About that is that, again, this is part of why I say this was sort of a particularly, I think, heavy or at least serious portion of the book, because then
mm-hmm.
you, as part of this, you describe in the book that initially, at least, you were, as you guys were making those discoveries and traveling down that sort of continuum, your posts, I think, reflected that. And
yeah.
then you make it very clear that the page and some of the posts kind of got away from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that then you had to, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's really important and interesting as an extension of what you just described about just how people approach things and how...
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Because... We, like I said, the page started by accident, basically. It was meant to be for friends and family, you know, because I lived where weren't supposed to have Esther, and you know, she was bylaws, right, as many cities do. You're not allowed to have hoofed animals, mini pig or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'd kept her really quiet, started this page for friends and family, no direction as to what it was happening. You know, I think if you look back to our very first post, like, the caption was like, you know, here's Esther, you know, something ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
It had no direction whatsoever. And so we very quickly gave Esther a voice. You know, that took a day or two where it was all of a sudden it was Esther talking, it wasn't us. And, you know, that happened really quick. But as we saw all the vegans coming onto the page, we thought, oh, great, you know, perfect. You know, we're vegan, they're vegan. You know, let's do this. And mm-hmm. so we started doing, yeah, very dedicated kind of vegan posts, not graphic stuff at all,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, infographic stuff, you know,
sure.
about veggies and that sort of thing. So what we saw was the page had just kind of started with non-vegans. We had a lot of our friends and family, and I still have a lot of friends that aren't vegan yet. We're making changes, but they're a lot of non-vegan friends, and of course the vegan crowd that was on it, and then headbutting started, you know, because a non-vegan friend would make a comment or say something, and then a vegan person would say, you know, one of the ones that pops out in my mind the most, because it happens today, to this day, is somebody comes on and says, you know, oh, you know, I never thought about pigs the same way I'm seeing Esther now, and I've given up pork, you know, and to us, that's the exact same thing that happened to us. You know, it was pork first, and then it was the next steps, because Esther helped us want to see those next steps, not sure. Because at any point somebody said to us, well, by the way, you can't just give up pork, you know, because we were doing this on our own. We didn't have these pages at the time. All of that was happening for us.
Sure.
So we had Esther gently massaging us and wanting us to know more. So that's what we were trying to replicate. And we would congratulate people for that. But then you would get somebody else would come on there. Well, what about chickens and cows and blah, blah, you know, and just tear a strip off of those people, you know, because they would come across and saying, well, you're encouraging people to just give up pork. And well, that's not at all what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's just that we're not telling them that they're not doing enough, which is what you did.
Yeah.
Right. And all that does, I don't care if it's about, you know, going vegan or if it's about how you're performing at work or at school. If somebody comes up to you, rather than encouraging and motivating and tells you you're not good enough or you're not doing enough or you're not doing it fast enough, you don't try better, try harder. You get upset or you get mad or you go back into your shell or you say, you know what, screw it.
Yeah, you get
I got nothing to prove to you. You know what I mean? And you've lost that person who was ready to take that step.
Yeah, instead of moving forward, you've alienated them.
So 100%. And because the vegans are, they already know what we know, you know, and it's the people that are like Derek and I were 5 years ago. Those are the people that we think we want to get through to the most, you know, because those are the people that you can actually have an impact on and actually change.
Yeah, for sure.
Alienate those people and to make those people feel like they're not good enough because either they haven't made that connection just yet, you know, or because they've taken step one but didn't jump all the way to step 10 today like you'd prefer, that's not good enough.
Right.
That to me is completely, completely unacceptable. And Derek's the same way. It infuriates Derek and you know, we won't put up with it. And it sounds so strange, but you know, we've had to block and ban more, we call them angry vegans from Esther's page than we have bacon trolls on Esther's page.
Isn't that interesting?
Because they come in guns blazing, you know, and just tearing people apart or tearing us apart because we congratulated somebody or encouraged somebody on taking that step. But our first comment is always, you know, congratulations, good for you. If you ever need help, go check out Esther's kitchen. You know, it's full of Esther-approved recipes, some stuff we really think you'll like, you know? So at no point did we say, well, you've got to go vegan. We just sent them to a page full of vegan recipes. You know, they'll figure it out.
Right. And right? even by now, if you're any kind of regular visitor to the page, I mean, just Esther approved is pretty significant, and it's loud and clear enough. I would think. Yeah, so
but it still gets questions, which is the nicest thing. I mean, because we get with a page like, I mean, last week, for example, we were up 18,000 followers in 7 days.
Jeez.
And so you're getting so many new people coming in all the time.
Yeah.
That you still, every single time you say Esther approved, there's somebody there that's like, well, what does that mean? You know, they're still asking that question.
Which is great,
you know,
because
I mean?
It's just new opportunities.
Exactly.
And as you say, if it's that much is happening now, I think as the book comes out, I can only imagine that you better hang on to your hat, because I can only assume the numbers are just going to spiral out of control.
The craziest week we had was early April. Like I said, our numbers have almost doubled since April, and it was because of that video you mentioned quickly in passing there, where I was feeding her with a spoon.
Oh my God.
And I think it was cantaloupe was the first one I posted that for whatever reason went absolutely crazy. And it was the funniest thing, because I remember that day and I was like, oh my God, I need to do a post. We work on the fly, right? I mean, it's very rare that I've scheduled a day's worth of posts. I mean, in the back of my mind right now, I'm knowing as soon as I'm off the phone, I've got to get something up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But not that there's a rush for it, but that, I work on the fly. That's the way I go, because what Esther's doing is what inspires her posts, obviously.
Sure.
You know, I can't plan her day for her ahead of time, because we post what she's doing, you know. So I grabbed a bowl of cantaloupe, laid with her on her bed because she was sleeping at the time, and I'm like, well, God, noon, it's going to be the third post of her lying down. I'm like, I've got to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
So laid down with this bowl of cantaloupe, fed it to her on the fork, and it went nuts. And I think it's up to 148 million views or something.
Oh, my
God. Something outrageous. Yeah. And that week alone, the page jumped 100 and something thousand followers in 7 days.
Yeah.
And it just ignited this snowball that's continued since. And it kind of goes in little waves now. It'll drop, 5,000 followers a week, or we're up, last week was a big one, up 17. Like, it's just really strange.
Yeah.
Strange.
Well, let me... Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to. Go ahead.
No, not at all. Like, I was just saying, it's no rhyme or reason as to what goes with stuff online. It's really funny.
But certain things just seem to take off in their own way, and obviously that's a perfect example. Again, this is Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Steve Jenkins, the co-author of Esther, The Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time. Due out May 31st, available now for pre-order. This conversation was recorded yesterday. So, it's funny. You already addressed something that I was going to ask about, because I just felt like, at this point, I wondered if you guys still were in a position or even had the time to still do all the posts for Esther, just because, and again, because they're always, the photos are always great, the videos are always great, they're always, the text is always witty, and I thought, okay, how do these guys get anything else done if they're still doing all that themselves? But apparently that's the case.
Oh, totally, yeah. No, that's the one thing. I mean, we've had to accept help in places, obviously. I mean, we can't possibly do everything on our own.
Sure.
So, I mean, we have a couple of moderators that help cruise through the comment feeds and monitor them for us, not for, being us, but for making sure that there's not fights happening, and for making sure that there's not, somebody, occasionally you do get the odd jerk that'll post something just offensive, what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it be a graphic video or something, whatever, that we want gone immediately.
Sure.
So you will very, very rarely see something like that on our comment feeds, because they're being so closely watched. That it'll last, or because Esther's followers, like I said, they're so voted. Some of these people, we've got a little group, we call them the riffraff, and they're so dedicated that, within a minute of something going wrong on that page, we'll get an email from one of these people. Hey, just wanted to let on your post at 11 a.m. about pages into the comment feed, so and so said this, and it's starting a fight.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Wow, so you've got people both in your employ and just people out there that are protective of Esther and the vibe of the page, it sounds like.
Absolutely, 100%. And we've even noticed people that will go on and they will answer questions for people. You know what I mean? Is Esther house trained? Is Esther, because there's so many new people coming in all the time that people start their own conversations and they answer the questions and they have discussions and, they create their own little groups. It's the craziest thing. It's like its own little community going on in these comment feeds. They're very protective of Derek and I and of Esther and of course of our family and what we're doing. So we very, very rarely have something get out of hand on the page because it's caught so quickly that it's dealt with and it's shut down. Other than that, I will never let go of the captions and the photographs of Esther, because nobody knows her the way that we do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
She's got a voice, and we try to, I think that's the only reason that we can keep it going, because let's be honest, what can you say about a pig sleeping on her bed? You know what I mean? You've got to have some inspiration behind that, either what she's thinking or feeling or doing, or some context to give it personality and make it boring.
Well, that's part of it, I think, clearly, is that it always does have personality. I mean, again, you look at a picture of her, if it had no caption, there's personality aplenty. And like you said, those eyes, those kind of soulful, expressive eyes, there could be nothing there, and people would probably like it like crazy. But then there is always something kind of very witty, like, hey, I'm waiting for dinner here, I can't wait much longer, or step on it, or, whatever it might be, a lot of the things of those themes. But people really, really respond. And it's so funny, I post last night that you would be the guest of tomorrow's show, and all kinds of people that I often hear from, I heard from, but all kinds of people commented or shared, and I thought, wow, this is the Esther phenomenon and a thing. And then at one point I noticed that Esther had liked some of these posts, and I thought, oh my God, I'm so self-conscious. There's like 75 likes or what at the most, and it's like this child's play compared to what what she's used to. But it's the best I could do, and I knew Esther would not be would not judge me. So
at all. Well, Esther's it's really funny. We call it, I'm sure you've heard that term, the Oprah effect. Do you remember that was thrown around years ago, right? About how Oprah mentioned a book or mentioned a business or whatever,
off.
Right?
Well,
we call it the Esther effect, because she's done the same sort of thing where there was a wildlife place, for example, up here where we found an injured porcupine on our sanctuary, and it was Easter weekend, And we called this rehab place. They dropped everything, showed up, picked up this porcupine, and taking amazing care of her. And so we did a post about it, just to say thank you for them helping us and to let people know that, you know, this porcupine Gus was going to be coming back. And because I'd posted a picture of him before. We saw her quite regularly. So I posted pictures. I love this little porcupine.
Mm-hmm.
So people knew we had this porcupine, and that's why we updated them. So when we said where she was, all of a sudden, you know, companies came out of the woodwork and sent these guys incubators.
Oh,
and
wow.
And the donations that went through to them to take care of Gussie and everybody else that they've got there, of course. You know, I mean, they called us and said, I don't even know what to say. Like, you know, thank you. You know, and all we done was say what she went, this is where they took her, and thank you for coming, you know, on Sunday of a long weekend, and you know, we can't wait to get her back. You know, we didn't ask them to send her money. We didn't ask for it, but
people do it.
Like,
yeah.
They're just such an amazing, amazing group of people. And the Esther's Army page that we've got going now, which is totally about relocation and causes. And like I said, Esther's main page, Esther the Wonder Pig, it's got a very dedicated theme and a feel to it.
Yeah.
So you will rarely, if ever, see a petition or see something of that nature on Esther the Wonder Pig's page.
Yeah.
On Esther's Army page, however, that's where we share all that stuff. You know, so we share all kinds of petitions and calls to action for different causes and relocations of animals. Because of the network, social media is such an amazing thing all over the world. That Esther's Army page has helped relocate and kind of facilitated the relocations and rehoming of hundreds and hundreds of animals everywhere from, you know, the United States to South America, Canada, Europe, Asia. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
How people have connected and kind of it's become this network. To get things done. Like I said, it's hard to wrap your head around exactly what's going on when you step back and look at what has been accomplished. And I mean, we've got an incredible team of admins that run the Esther's Army page. And those ladies work like nothing I've ever seen. Like, I mean, they get things done like you wouldn't believe. You know, and personally getting invested in things. You know,
yeah.
I know that we've personally had admins that have, you know, driven animals or picked animals up. Or
yeah.
It's unbelievable how much goodness there is in people, you know, and kindness there is in people to step up and do this sort of thing.
Yeah, and it sounds like a perfect example of harnessing, in a way, the Esther phenomenon, but in a just slightly different place. So if people don't want to come to the Esther page necessarily for that, they can go elsewhere, and yet you're still using this incredible impact that this pig has on people for all this goodwill and helping animals. And just we're sort of even past probably end of our time here, Steve. I'm sorry, but we should briefly at least talk about Happily Ever Esther, kind of an upshot of all this in a way. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
So maybe just tell us a little bit just about what it is. And
it's,
you know,
the most amazing thing. It's unreal. Like, it's again, it comes back to Esther herself and when this page was all starting and us living where we shouldn't have had her. And so her popularity at the time, I mean, we had under, I think, 100,000 followers or you know, just over 100,000 followers. But to us, it might as well have been, you know, the entire population of Canada. You know, we were terrified. And as far as we were concerned, you know, the town was going to show up at any day and, you know, tell us that Esther had to go. So we went to the page and said, you know, we're thinking of moving. We had been through, as I was telling you, this looking at homes for Esther when we weren't sure what we could do and found out about farm sanctuaries and found out how full they were. And so we just said to the page, well, hey, we know we've got to move. We can't stay where we are for all the reasons I'd outlined. We're thinking of buying a farm and opening a sanctuary. What do you think? And the page went crazy. So we started this fundraiser, a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo, and we raised $440,000 in 60 days.
Yeah, amazing.
And unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal. And then purchased this 50-acre farm in Campbellville, which is about 45 minutes west of Toronto. And since we moved there in November, so we started the page December 4th, and we closed on the farm November 4th of the following year. So 11 months after we started, or introduced Esther to the world, like we had raised all this money, moved to this farm, hadn't been used in 25 years. They still lived here, but hadn't been farming it in ages. So we came to this stunning farm and have since, you know, rebuilt all these fences and started to clean it up. We've got 40 animals living here now, cows, a donkey, a horse, a bunch of pigs, goats, sheep, chickens, a peacock, rabbits. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. And it's called Happily Ever Esther, as you mentioned. And it's amazing. And again, it was inspired by her. You know, I mean, we didn't know what we were going to do. And if we had to, you know, throw in the towel, you know, there was nowhere for her to go.
Yeah.
You know, they were full. And at the time, I mean, you hate to say now, I think if I needed to find a home for Esther, I wouldn't have a problem. But back then, nobody cared.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was nobody to them. So for me to find a home for her would have been impossible or damn near. You know, and to think of other people being in that situation is what really inspired the start of Happily Ever Esther. That's that.
Yeah, no, it's cool because you've got a place for other people's Esther, which is
absolutely.
Amazing. Yeah,
you know, and I hope that the way that we're presenting everything that's going on, that we're preventing other Esters.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, where people get these figs and, you know, think, we were so lucky. You know, we both worked from home and we made it work. You know, we made it work with her. But I could not fault anybody for not have being able to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, knowing what we went through.
Sure.
I couldn't fault anybody if they said, you know, I can't do this. You know, I work 9 to 5. I've got 2 kids. I could not hold it against them if they said I couldn't do it, unless they got her knowing how much work it was and
right.
just decided to throw in the towel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of a very fine line. You know, like, I get it. I get why it's so much, you know, why they're abandoned. But we want to prevent people from getting them in the first place.
For
without
sure.
knowing that they've got to be prepared for that.
Well, if they read,
you know,
this book, they'll be prepared. So
I hope so. I mean, I wouldn't give her away for the world. I would
obviously
not trade her for the world.
Well,
but I hope people don't run out and get one because they think they see what we've got, because I can't stress enough how much and how hard it was, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, to get there.
Right. Well, no, and as breezy and fun and upbeat as it is, the book really does make clear, and I think it also makes clear, at least implicitly, and I think kind of ultimately explicitly, that this was a singular situation, including like what you just said, the fact that you guys
yeah.
both worked at home. There
yeah.
was a lot of things that enabled this to get past
yeah.
some pretty dark moments where a lot of people would have said, you know what,
we've got
to take this pig elsewhere. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and if you can do it, I can tell you, she has enriched our lives.
Yeah.
Just having her around, you know, forget everything that's happening with, you know, Esther the Wonder Pig. You know, just having her around has enriched our lives in more ways than I could ever count. But, you know, like I said, it was a lot of work to get here. So, yeah, anybody that does want a pig as a pet, they are incredible and smart and amazing, and you will love them. Just brace yourself.
Right. And
for the work that's involved.
And
you know.
She's right next to you now, I believe, as we speak,
is.
Right?
Let's
yeah.
see
is she sleeping? Or? Yeah.
Okay. She is. She tends to sleep most of the time.
Well, I think my conversation with people does tend to put them asleep. But
well, let me see if I can get her to say hello for us here. She was up for her morning walk.
Yeah, well, I think that's been documented, of course, on a post. But
okay. Here, I'm going to put the phone down to her here. See if
okay.
you can hear.
Hello, Esther. Hello, Esther. Oh, wow. Yeah, we're getting some good action there. Cool. Okay, well, I think now the interview is complete. Oh, we're still getting some good chewing and stuff. Yeah, awesome.
Esther having a mint.
Yeah.
Good girl.
So we've been speaking with Steve Jenkins. Again, the new book is Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time, out officially on the 31st, but available for pre-order. You can do that by way of going to estherthewonderpig.com or where you normally get your books online or elsewhere. And the Sanctuary website is happilyeveresther.ca. And, of course, obviously Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I think we all know that. So, Steve, really great speaking with you. And good luck with the book, and good luck with Esther and the Sanctuary and everything else, and take care.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
All right, my thanks again to Steve Jenkins and to Esther. It's time to step into the comedy corner. Joe Zimmerman has quickly become a favorite of mine here on Talking Animals, as has this bit. Here's the second portion of a piece called Pet Snakes by Joe Zimmerman. Today's comedy corner. I'm talking animals.
Apparently snakes have taken over the Everglades, giant exotic anacondas and Burmese pythons. They don't belong there. Apparently people bought baby snakes. They didn't realize they grow to be up to 25 feet long. So at some point in that growth, they were like, hey, Mrs. Slithersby got scary. She just took a horse-sized dump. And our horse is missing. Have you seen Pony Danza? Maybe we should put her outside. She'd be happy in the Everglades, nice swamp, lots of old people. She'll do well. I know you guys think I don't have any more snake material. But my friend had a snake. and it constricted on his arm. This story doesn't end well. He had to cut off its head with a knife. He has permanent nerve damage in his arm. And he goes, I don't get it. 10 years, no problems. And then this happened, and I wanted to be like, well, I get it. It's not like it was sitting behind that glass loving you. It was just staring at you with eyelids that don't blink, hating you. And every day it was growing, waiting for the day when you could fit in its stomach. And after 10 years of that, he was like, screw it, I'm not big enough, but I'm tired of living in this fish tank. I don't care if he has a knife, let's do this, YOLO. I know, you only live once. Hashtag YOLO, the snake said it.
That was Joe Zimmerman with a portion of a piece called Pet Snakes, taken from his album Smiling at Wolves. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lloyd and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Koth. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Let's do just a quick animal news item. I don't see how I could get through today's show without acknowledging what happened. Preakness, I'm just going to read a little bit of an AP account. 10 years after Kentucky Derby winner Barbaro tragically broke down at the start of the Preakness, the owners of the popular colt watched another horse they bred die during a race on a rainy Saturday at Pimlico Racecourse. The tragic start to a day that ended with Exaggerator upsetting Nyquist in the 141st Preakness Stakes. Gretchen and Roy Jackson's four-year-old filly Promita broke down during the fourth race on the Preakness undercard and was euthanized on the track. Philly's jockey Daniel Centeno broke his collarbone in the spill that occurred on the turn of a race run over a wet turf course. Quote, it's ironic, right? Roy Jackson told the Associated Press. It was tough to watch, and so on. Ironic, I guess. If you don't know what ironic means. I'm Duncan Trotz. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to see the Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, which acknowledges a sad passing last week. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ed. A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course, that is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Go right to the source and ask the horse.
I don't think we made that one too tough. Probably take any guesses off the air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lloyd is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, June 1st, alongside my friend Laura Taylor, raising money on Talking Animals for WMNF, kicking off the first day of the WMNF Summer Membership Drive. Again, information about fast, easy ways to pledge in support of Talking Animals and the Talking Animals exclusive thank you gifts for pledges of various levels can be found at talkinganimals.net, or please consider making a donation via our tip jar. The link to our tip jar is posted on the Talking Animals Radio Show Facebook page and my personal Facebook page. We make it easy for you. Come on, so help a guy. Hope you'll join us again next Wednesday. Contribute in the meantime would be great, too. We always have fun, Laura and I, on the Fun Drive shows. We also have a link to the Talk Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally. Follow us on Twitter. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Catch up with you. Meet right back here next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Coming up on 5 minutes of NPR News headlines, and then Rob Lloyd with Radioactivity. Take care. Thanks.